Welcome.
Welcome.
Housewives of True Crime.
Yeah.
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. Always something.
We both get back from vacation last night.
This is true. We thought we were rock stars when we left because we got all our stuff done ahead of time.
Like way ahead of time. And then we realized that two of our episodes were released last week instead of just one. And today there was nothing.
And we don't like to leave you hanging like that.
No. So we decided we are going to give you a Patreon episode.
Yeah.
And a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one. So you'll get a little taste of what Patreon, how we roll over there. This is an episode that I am fond of. It's about Phil Hartman. I think it's one of the cases that made me get into true crime, really, because yeah. It just always haunted me.
I know. You always were. You liked him a lot. You like comedy. I can feel like you probably in your older days would have thought he was real hot.
Oh, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I remember that and when we recorded it and I was freezing my butt off, which is opposite of what I'm doing now. So
that's right. We recorded this during the Great Texas Freeze.
Kind of ironic, actually.
That it's the Great Texas Heat.
Oh my gosh. Is it warm over there?
Oh my God. Yeah, I just sent Tab a meme that said, like, you better get your shit together because you can't handle hell.
Yeah, because nobody likes it this hot for this long.
Nobody. Yeah.
No, yeah. I have come to Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's fun. We just got back from Austin. We had a family reunion out there and it was so, I will tell you, one of my favorite trips for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. And you were up in Northern California, Tahoe, which is also everybody's favorite trip.
One of my favorite trips. Yeah. Can't wait to go back. Love it. Beautiful. There's no place like Tahoe.
That's what everybody says. You know, I've only been there during the winter to ski, but never experienced it in the summer. So maybe next year I'll come with you.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get to the episode since we need to get this live ASAP. And I hope you guys enjoy. And if you guys want to check out more of Patreon, we do have a bonus crime coming up also this week, right, Gretchy? Or is it next week? It's either this week or next week. Okay.
Next week.
So that's patreon.com/housewivesoftruecrime. And here is our episode of Phil Hartman.
Today, I'm going to tell you about the late, great Phil Hartman. If you're not familiar, he was a comedic actor who was killed by his wife in 1998. And I don't think I am alone in just never being able to reconcile what the fuck happened that brought her to that point. Like, you know, it was a murder-suicide.
Right.
But I think after this deep dive, while there will always be unanswered questions, most of the pieces of the puzzle kind of come together. Okay, so Phil, born 1948 in Canada, but his family moved to the United States when he was around 10. Phil actually graduated college from both of our alma maters, Tab.
CSUN?
The CSUN. Yeah, California State University of Northridge.
All right.
Got himself a degree in graphic design.
Oh, who knew?
Who knew? Okay, a degree which he put to good use. Phil actually designed some album covers for huge bands like America and Poco.
Whoa. Well, yeah. I mean, those are kind of before our time, but yeah.
Yeah, well, it would. Yeah, but they were the cool bands at the time when he was designing.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Right? From what I gather about Phil's life in his 20s, they were pretty charmed years, which is not surprising because he's charming, right? Mm-hmm. And really intelligent, and that's how he scored the graphic design jobs. He partied with cool people. Apparently, he used to hang out with Larry Hagman, you know, the guy from Genie and Dallas.
Yeah.
Your
he
show.
He was the cool guy.
Yeah, they used to hang out in the boo, smoking the reefer and hot tubbing after catching waves.
Oh,
right?
Sounds like Jeremiah's kind of thing, except for the reefer.
Yeah, my husband does not smoke pot. He's so boring.
I don't think he ever has. He's so boring.
He has a couple times and he's lame. Okay. But now he's a boat captain and he gets drug tested regularly. So There's only one stoner in this house. Okay.
And she does it like once every five years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found some the other day.
You found some?
Yeah, I found
like
some.
What? Did somebody leave it over
like
your house?
In a baggie. No.
No way. Like old school style?
Yeah. Somebody gave me some and I was like, oh, I'm going to keep that and put it in my underwear drawer in case I ever have guests.
That you wanted to like give it to?
I like to be hospitable.
Hospital. Put him in the hospital.
And then I was like, it's all dried out and pretty.
What
pretty
are you going to just like pull? Yeah, like you're going to pull
know.
It out.
Maybe
and be
I'll
like,
make some brownies or something, see if it works. Who knows?
Oh my God, you're not going to do that, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, no, because I'd go off my diet. Okay. Anywho. Phil's friends describe him as being the guy who liked to party but knew when to cut himself off, which I really appreciate people who can indulge without getting lame. Like, it's a talent, right?
I've got it.
It took me years to perfect it, and I still blow it once in a while. Yeah. Every couple of years you blow it too, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Every once in a while, you got to, like, just get too drunk.
Yeah, there for sure. But I'm pretty good now.
I'm pretty good now, too, I think.
Are probably not as good, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Phil bought himself a little house in the Los Angeles suburb of Sherman Oaks, like in his 20s. So smart. Responsible.
That's
right?
Real responsible. Yeah.
He married a woman named Gretchen.
No shit.
He did. Her name was Gretchen Lewis, and they were married from 1970 to 1972. I never found anything where she publicly talked about her marriage to Phil, but I did see an interview with Phil himself where he said that his first marriage was just never destined to work. They were just too young, which is common, right? Lots of people don't get it right the first time. So Phil, this single guy in the City of Angels, kind of killing it at life, but he's looking to expand his creative horizons and meet some new lady friends. So he joined the Groundlings. The Groundlings is a big deal. Everybody knows what it is in LA. It's a legendary improv group where they have shows every week you can go see that are super funny that has launched the careers of greats like Will Ferrell, Conan, Cheryl Hines, Lisa Kudrow. List goes on and on.
You have to be invited to the Groundlings. You can't just like show up and be like, hey, I want in the club.
You start taking low-level classes, and then you get voted up is how it works. Anyone could take a class at the Groundlings, but not everybody can perform.
If I ever move back to LA, I'm going to do that.
I think we should do it together. I think that would be real fun. I always wanted to do that.
I love improv. So
yeah, I think it's funny.
Yeah, me too. So I would love to do that. That's going to be like when our kids are in college. And we can like do something. We might be too old to like.
Let's do that.
Get up in the business, but
yeah. And then we'll embarrass them. We'll like post it on YouTube. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyhow, his time at the Groundlings was the beginning of him doing a bunch of voiceover work. He also met Paul Rubens, aka Pee-wee Herman, there, and they eventually developed Pee-wee's Playhouse, where Phil played Captain Carl. Pee-wee's Playhouse, such a good show. You know, I let my kids watch it.
Yeah, me
Still,
too.
It's on Netflix. Yeah.
Okay, so listen, you know, Large Marge?
Uh-huh. That's from the movie.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the TV show.
Yeah.
Well, Large Marge scared the bejesus out of one of Kyla's friends, so much so that she had to go home in the middle of the night and I had to call her dad to come pick her up.
Oh, my God.
And you probably know who I'm talking about.
Oh, geez. Oh, yeah. I would not want to call that dad in the middle of the night. I'd be real afraid of him.
Oh, my God. It was really not.
And he's probably like, you let her watch what?
She's the one that said that she's watched it before. So I thought it was fine. But, you know, I think little kids tell you like, yeah, I can watch that. And then, like, really, their parents are like, no, you can't watch that.
No, you can't. Yeah. Phil has this illustrious career, and I'm going to pretty much gloss over it because if I don't, we'll never get to him meeting his third wife, Bryn, and that fateful night. But first, I'm going to tell you about his second wife and marriage before I get there, because her name is Lisa Strain and she is still with us and she has a lot of insight into Phil as a husband, which is interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
He had an amazing career. He's a legend. I'm going to pretty much skip over it. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Phil in 1982, when he was 32, married Lisa. They had a really low-key wedding, which Lisa says is partly because Phil's a real cheapskate. In fact, she said when they were married, they never shared money and they never even shared shampoo.
What?
Yeah.
Like he made her buy her own shampoo?
Yeah.
How long were they married for?
Oh my God. I mean, not very long. Less than 3 years.
Yeah, because I think I would be like, dude, I can't handle that cheapskate.
Yeah. I mean, I've had some encounters with cheapskate. I had a roommate who I'm still very good friends with. God bless him. But I don't know how his wife does it. He wouldn't let us run the dishwasher on the hot cycle, like to dry it.
Oh my God.
Because he was like, that's too much energy. I think the hot cycle is when the dishwasher does its job.
Like, yeah, that's what
I think sanitize
too.
It. Yeah, you need that.
Oh, God. Yeah. My husband, I could say, is kind of he's like a cheapskate in some ways, right?
But he makes up for it in other areas.
He does. But listen, like, okay, you know, before you get married, some of these guys act like they're not going to be cheapskates. Like he would valet the car every restaurant we went to when he was taking me out on dates, right?
Yeah.
Now he's like, you valeted the car? That's $10. You know?
Oh my God. Oh my God. He must hate me so much because when they were in LA and I would meet them for dinner, I'd always be like, hey, go ask your husband for money. I don't have any cash to buy.
I know. I'm like, wait, you can't date somebody and act like you're one thing and then marry them and then completely say that Starbucks is too expensive and not valet your car anymore.
Well, thank God you didn't marry that guy who wouldn't let you order iced tea.
I know. I mean, Sean, I dated a guy that every time I ordered iced tea, he was like, that's, by the way, that was like in 2000. That iced tea
like
probably only cost $1. Yeah. Now it's like $2.50 or $3. And my husband did say the other day on the bill, he was like, that iced tea was $3.50. I was like, okay. And then I called him the name of my old boyfriend.
Yeah.
He loved that. Okay, Phil's a cheapskate.
Phil's a cheapskate, married to Lisa. While they were married, Lisa worked as a server, and she was supportive of Phil pursuing acting. She says it wasn't a two-way street, though. When she expressed her own interest in an acting career, he was not cool with it. She said that although he was getting regular acting jobs, he would periodically quit and go back to graphic design for a while because he liked the financial stability, which is sort of admirable, right? If you're trying to impress like Susie Orman, but it's also kind of boring. I mean, you know?
What, graphic design?
No, I mean, just quitting, like you're getting acting work. And
but
you're
not...
like, but he's like, but I need the financial stability.
Yeah.
So then you go back.
Acting work is so unstable. I mean, even for actors that are pretty good and well-known, their lives are like always hanging, right? It's like, oh, hopefully that show gets picked up for another season. And if not, what the fuck am I going to do? You know what I mean?
Well, I got the vibe that Lisa wanted to be married to the comedian, actor, improv, you know, exciting guy, mm-hmm. not the boring graphic designer. And graphic design wasn't the only thing she found boring about Phil. She says his libido was also boring.
Oh.
She was young, newlywed, and craved attention from her husband, but he refused to argue with her. She said he would just check out. You know,
mm-hmm.
later. Yeah, hate that, right? Mm-hmm. On their anniversary, they got a hotel in Santa Barbara, and she put on lingerie and jumped on top of him, and he said, could you just stop? And she says she remembers thinking to herself, like, yeah, I can just stop forever. And she also says that he started calling her just this insatiable black hole because she, you know, needed attention, you know, God forbid, right? Which she describes as emotionally abusive. And I get that. Feeling alienated sucks, especially for us ladies. That's what brings out our insecurities and usually provokes us to act real, you know, peanuts, butter, and jelly. So the marriage didn't last, but they did stay friends.
Okay. I could see that for sure.
Yeah. Good. I think, you know, good on ya.
Yeah.
No sharing shampoo. Doesn't give a shit about you jumping on him in lingerie. Get out before you have kids. Okay.
Right. 100%.
So not too long after that marriage ended, he met Bryn Omdahl at a party in 1984. There is no denying Bryn is an absolute beauty. She made her way out to La La Land from Arizona to pursue a modeling career. The name she was born with was Vicky Jo. Mm-hmm. I think Bryn was a good choice in name change. Bryn is like a hot girl name.
It is a hot girl name. And Vicky Jo doesn't sound like an Arizona name. It sounds like somewhere else in the country.
Okay. Yeah. Pretty early on in their relationship, the people close to Phil say they didn't think that highly of the two of them being together. They said they knew why Phil was with her. They got like trophy vibes. But the women that Phil had been with before had all been funny. And
Bryn wasn't?
No, she just wasn't.
She was just hot.
Yeah, she was just hot. Additionally, they were that couple that got into fights that made everyone feel uncomfortable. Bryn was known to fly off the handle.
Oh, in front of people.
In front of people. Yeah. I mean, fight behind closed doors all day, but you can't do it in front of your friends, right? It's a real buzzkill.
It really is. I mean, sometimes that I don't fly off the handle. Nobody flies off the handle, but people can sense that Sean and I are like, maybe not on the best terms sometimes. And I always am like, we are just a buzz fucking kill right now.
Oh, yeah. I've done it too. And I felt real bad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, probably a factor that contributed to Bryn being so irritable was that she had a little coke habit. Actually, it was more than a habit. It was a problem. She went to meetings to help her stay clean, you know, periodically. And it was a lifelong battle for Bryn. I'm not sure if she ever really wanted to get clean, even though she was going to meetings. I kind of feel like maybe it was just a band-aid because she went to them, but she sought out meetings in like Beverly Hills neighborhoods where she hoped to spot celebrities.
Mm.
So that doesn't say like I've hit rock bottom. To me, you know, that says like, OK, Phil, I stopped using. I went to a meeting. What more do you want from me? You know?
Yeah.
OK. So Phil and Bryn are this tumultuous couple, and there's many accounts of Bryn acting out volatilely. But also don't think it's fair to just blame her for this. I mean, it takes two to tango. And like I told you, he was described by his previous wife as being kind of a dick. And it seems like the two of them were just like, you know, matches and gasoline together. Right?
Yeah. You know what's funny is that you say that before he wouldn't argue. Like he just like backed down and like, but there are times where I've been in like relationships, short ones, but that you just don't click, right? And so you fight, which I'm like, I've never fought like this before. This is really not even me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, I hate the shutdown. I mean, I want to talk about it. I want to stay up all night and talk about it. And then I want to go to bed. I don't want to like, I mean, if somebody wouldn't argue with me, I wouldn't like that.
I know, but it sounds like now he's arguing. You know, he wouldn't argue with Lisa, but now with Bryn, he's arguing.
Well, I think that he would ignore her, and so she would act out.
To the point where he couldn't stop.
So he would check out and that would just make her more mad. So she would act volatilely.
Okay.
Like the more he ignored her, the more it amped her up.
I get that.
Yeah, I get it. So I think that maybe they confuse that toxic dynamic for passion or something. Or maybe it was the fact that Brynn got knocked up. But for whatever reason, Brynn and Phil got married in November 1987. Phil had just started his SNL career and they were living in New York City where Brynn had gotten a receptionist job and took acting classes when they tied the knot. She hung around SNL a lot. She would do stuff like sit on the writers' laps and just be extra. But people say it just never seemed to bother Phil. Just to speak a little bit about this behavior, there is an interview on YouTube where Phil and Howard Stern, and at the end, Brynn joins in. It is so cringy. I am going to play you some of the audio.
Okay. Okay.
Because I know you're a good man, I really wish I could show you my wife's body because
I swear to, would you ever let me? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't that be great?
Well, we're fans here of Howard.
Yes.
We don't normally do this sort of thing.
Would that be acceptable?
We could work out some kind of trade.
You would never show me your body, would you? It's only Phil's.
Well, in a bikini.
In a bikini, I could.
I didn't bring one. So.
If I invited you to my house, you would sit by the pool and swim?
Sure.
Well, that would certainly be enough. But you are beautiful. You cannot weigh more than 110 pounds, am I correct?
No, I'm 120.
You're 120, but you are what? 6'7" tall? I mean, how tall are you? You are what? You are very tall.
5'9".
You are 5'9". That is my favorite height. This is the height all women should be. And you would be...
Howard loves my wife.
I do.
Howard loves my...
Let me ask you a question, Phil. And let me ask you, Brynn. May I have not kissed you hello. Would that be inappropriate to kiss you hello?
I wish, honey.
Could I kiss your wife hello? Brynn, would it be... Do you find me repulsive?
No.
She loves you.
She does, really?
I love you.
She gets up every morning.
I think
with
I'm as attractive, certainly, as Phil.
I force my 5-year-old to listen to your show every
day. That is very, very good parenting.
Yeah.
All right, now, so I can kiss you. Can I kiss you hello?
Mm-hmm.
On the lips?
Of course.
That would be all right?
Yes.
You would not be upset by that?
No, I'll be watching the watch.
No, but I mean, just would that be okay, Brynn?
Well, what do you mean?
First of all, you know I'm healthy because I have only made love to the same woman for 19 years. So my lips are virginal. I have no herpes. I have no venereal diseases.
Your eyes look very clear.
My eyes are clear. It would be simply a friendly kiss, would it not?
Well, a friendly kiss is fine.
All right, let us begin the kissing process. I'm going to kiss you on the lips if it's okay with you and if it's okay with Phil.
Yes, it certainly is.
All right, here we go.
We held out way too long.
See?
How did you feel about that?
I
love you both. What
I think
I
she's
say?
Cheating on you the way she went for me. I really do.
Okay, guys, so you can't see it, but when they start kissing, they like completely wrap their arms around each other and they really kiss. It's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah. So.
And Phil doesn't care.
And Phil's all about it.
Well, I mean, we did do that other episode where some people like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this was kind of different. I think that Phil did not respect Brynn.
Got it.
He was like, she's my trophy wife. Blah, you know, like,
yeah.
I just don't, you know, I think other situations people were like, you know, they're just voyeuristic. They like to watch. I don't think this was that.
It seems to me that maybe Phil didn't respect women or women that he was with.
Maybe women that he was with. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm just saying, like,
yeah,
the pattern is there.
The pattern is there. Yeah. Okay. So Brynn has been described as being cold to females that were associates of Phil's, whether they were colleagues or friends. But Julia Sweeney, who is really well known for her SNL character Pat, was actually friends with Brynn. You know, do you remember who Julia Sweeney is?
I do. Yeah.
She's so
Pat
funny. Okay.
Was
indifferent.
Pat. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you could even do that skit now.
Pat was not a boy or a girl. Pat was just Pat.
Yeah. Okay, so Julia got to know a side of her that I don't think a lot of people did, and not just because Bryn could be difficult, but because I think people be judgy about hot chicks, you know? Like, they don't necessarily, especially if Phil put off this kind of, like, I don't respect my wife vibe, it's like other people are not going to treat her that way either, okay? Right. She's 5'9", you know, she's like this Amazon beauty. And these are comedians, right?
Right.
But Sweeney says she was endearing and fun. And I think it's worth mentioning because, you know, most people are real quick to just annihilate her. And like, there had to be something good about her, right? I mean, I get it why they do that. She did something unthinkable. She killed their friend. You know?
Yeah.
Bryn gives birth to a baby boy. And Phil's ex-wife, Lisa, sent them well wishes in the form of a card and a gift. Well, Bryn no like that. Okay? She hand wrote a scathing 4-page response to Lisa that said things like, if you ever come near our family, I will claw your eyes out.
Whoa.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that's extra.
Handwriting does make you seem extra nuts, right? Something about just being able to like pen to paper and unleash is so like serial killer. Okay. Lisa gets this letter and then she calls up Phil and is like, what the fuck? And he said, oh, you should have seen what she wanted to send you. And Lisa was like, you knew she sent this to me? That's kind of balls. And why does she hate me so much? And he said, oh, it's probably because one night she asked if her and I were soulmates. And I told her, nope, don't think we are. I think I am probably soulmates with my ex-wife, Lisa. Oh. And Lisa was like, Phil, that's insane. And he's like, yeah, I don't even know why I said it. It really set her off. Sorry about that.
I mean, come on. You think?
Lisa and Phil ended up not talking for a couple of years after that conversation. I mean, can you blame her?
No.
Yeah, right? Okay, so Phil's career was really taking off. He started playing President Clinton on SNL, which is, you know, so coveted by the SNL cast, whoever gets to play the president at the time. He also started doing the voices for a couple of regular characters on The Simpsons. Phil bought a home in Encino, California. It's a nice home, about 4,000 square feet, and it was $1 million. It's valued now at about 2.8.
Okay.
Phil put up a 50% deposit. So responsible, right?
Yeah, that's a good deposit.
Yeah, okay. People were kind of surprised by the house that Phil chose because although it's super nice, it's like a block off of Ventura Boulevard. And you could just walk right up to the door. And they just thought, it's kind of surprising for someone as high profile as Phil was now.
There was no gate before.
There was a gate to like get buzzed in, but it is just right there. I mean, I'm going to get to a point where I explain to you that they lived 1,000 feet from a Buca di Beppo.
Oh, I know exactly where they live.
Yeah.
My kid went to school in Encino. So I know exactly where that is. I've been to that Buca di Beppo. It is a busy area, but there's a lot of celebrities that live up there.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of cool that Phil wasn't trying to live in like Beverly Hills with the yuppies. I mean, clearly he had the money to do it.
Yeah.
But he liked Encino.
He's a cheapskate.
I like Encino. Yeah, I love Encino. Yeah. But, you know.
Let me tell you, Encino right now is not what Encino was then.
That's
Encino,
true.
That Buca di Beppo is filled with the homeless people now. But so Phil probably would have taken it his ass somewhere else than one block off of Ventura Boulevard. But, you know, I think it's an okay area where he he chose, and he chose that because it was a lot. Like, he could get 4,000 square feet for $1 million instead of Beverly Hills, where it would be like five.
Yeah.
Or probably at the time, three, you know? Yeah.
So Phil and Bryn had another child they named Bergen, and she was born on a night when he was taping SNL, and they announced it on the air.
Whoa.
Which is sweet, right? You know.
But he wasn't in the hospital when she was born?
He went to the hospital when she was born and was back by the end of filming.
Wow.
Like for the wrap party. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Sounds like my husband, actually.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
So also, just side note, in the beginning of SNL, when they flash to Phil, you know, they're introducing the cast, and they flash to Phil like sitting at a diner and he waves.
Yeah.
There is a blonde next to him, and you see the side of her head and her earring swinging. And that was actually Bryn.
That's her.
Yeah, she's in the intro. So after Bryn had babies, she did not give up her dream of getting into acting, too. And for the most part, I mean, and they still struggled in their marriage. And Phil pretty much kept his personal struggles close to his vest. But one of the things that friends say that he did talk about was Bryn's constant nagging him to get her parts on shows or movies that he had connections with. So he would be like, do me a solid and give her a couple lines. And they were like, okay, Phil, is she funny? And he was like, eh. And so it got awkward.
Yeah.
So for a while, Phil was in a development deal for his own show that was going to be the Phil Show. But the network never pulled the trigger on it. And like, he was okay with it. He ended up doing, a lot of comedians had shows at the time, like Martin Short, and they flopped. And he kind of like didn't want the pressure. And he ended up getting on the show News Radio, and it was like an ensemble cast, and that was kind of more of his jam. But anyway, so when this show got the kibosh, Bryn took it hard, right? Because she was like, fuck, he can finally get me a role because it's his show. Like, no excuse, right? She was let down. And she confided in Julia Sweeney the same story that ex-wife Lisa had told about, you know, the letdown of their sex life, too.
Yeah.
She said it was pretty meh.
You have heard me talk about my language learning skills with Rosetta Stone, and I'm telling you, I'm getting really good at it. I learned a little bit of Japanese before we went to Japan last year, and I really love the French language, so I'm learning French at the moment. Bonjour, bonsoir. I'm even getting a little bit of the accent down. Not very good, but I'm getting there. And with Rosetta Stone, it makes it so easy. I download it on my phone. I learn it in the car. It is awesome. You can do it on your desktop, wherever you find it convenient. They are there for you. And they have 25 languages, you guys, that you can use. And right now they are giving a lifetime membership for 50% off. So you can learn as many languages as you want for your entire life, which is amazing. And the best part is, it starts off, you know, with just words and then phrases and then sentences, and then you should be able to have a conversation with somebody that also knows the language, which is, you know, my entire goal. So don't put off learning that language. There is no better time than right now. Seriously, get started before your summer vacay. Our listeners get 50% off the lifetime membership. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem it today at rosettastone.com/today.
Listeners, did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. Plus, those products are often filled with nasty ingredients like chlorine and ammonia. That's a lose-lose situation for you and the planet. Nobody's trying to have that. Enter Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautiful cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. Genius! You'll never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run again. Refills start at just $2.25. Blue Land is trusted in over 1 million homes, including mine, y'all. When I received my first shipment of Blue Land, I was blown away by how this simple concept just makes so much sense. It's so easy. You just drop the tablet into the stylish functional bottles and get your clean on. I love the subscription option because I am not trying to get one more bulky item in my cart. Blue Land products really get the job done and leave my home smelling so fresh and clean. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/clink. You won't want to miss this, guys. blueland.com/clink for 15% off.
So, Brynn's bombed, right? No career, no sex. But, you know, Phil was like this really dedicated family guy. I mean, from the outside, they looked pretty good. Everyone says that they both adored their kids. And people, it was common knowledge that there was problems. Everyone says they knew that Phil stayed in the marriage so much so because he adored his kids and that he was never unfaithful to Brynn. But a close friend of Phil's describes him as just being a guy with a room that no one will ever get into. Like a room in his head that no one will ever get into. And I imagine Brynn might agree with that. They started going to marriage counseling, but mostly Phil didn't show up. And she just did the sessions by herself. And as the years went on in the Hartman house, Phil's distant nature fed into Brynn's insecurities. They had this impossible dynamic because Brynn never got over that addiction to coke. She went to rehab a couple times, like, you know, did some stays of promises, stuff like that. But she would never give up drinking socially, and the alcohol made her want to use. And so it was a cycle. Phil's way of handling his coked out wife was to smoke pot. And, you know, those don't, they don't go together, right? Like, unless both people are doing both, you know, if you're on coke, it's no fun to hang out with a stoner and vice versa.
Because one's an upper, one's a downer.
it don't work. I don't recommend. Okay.
Okay.
So in 1997, they had a New Year's Eve party. This was when Phil was on the sitcom News Radio with Andy Dick.
Okay.
Brynn apparently went up to him at the party and asked him if he had any coke, which of course Andy Dick had coke, right? And just like that, Brynn was off the wagon again. But unlike John Lovitz, I don't blame Andy for this relapse of Brynn's. She was an addict. If it wasn't Andy that she would have gone up to that night to find coke, she would have gotten it from somebody else. Okay?
Yeah. Right.
But in 2007, at the Laugh Factory, I mean, this is just like a little side note, John Lovitz beat Andy up over it. Like, they both admit that this happened. John was really good friends with Phil, and he says it's Andy's fault that Brynn started using coke again, and he says Andy killed Phil.
Oh, shoot.
Bananas. Like, he beat him up.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think I remember that.
Okay.
Happening. Yeah.
Brynn had jealousy issues, and they were no joke. For example, Phil had a love for Catalina Island.
Like you.
Like, and you, we've been there together.
I know.
He bought himself a boat and a plane, and he escaped his troubled marriage a lot with island getaways.
By himself, without her.
With friends, yeah.
Without her, though. I'm just saying,
without her.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Brynn did not like to go to Catalina after Phil took her out on a day when it was really rough.
Do you think he did that on purpose?
Well, friends do. Friends of his do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, I've been out to Catalina on a rough day, and it is not fun.
Well, I spent years on boats. The first time you go out, you're on rough seas and you're sick and miserable. I mean, it's pretty hard to get somebody to go out again.
It is so awful.
Yeah, it is the worst, right? So anyways, Phil's closest friend was a guy named Britt Marin. He has said that, for one, Brynn didn't like him because he got the vibe that she wasn't really cool with any of Phil's friends unless they were celebrities. And since he was the one that went with Phil to Catalina most of the time, Brynn was real suspicious of him.
Mm-hmm.
He says she hired a private investigator to follow them around.
Weird. Why?
I don't know. He thinks that she suspected that they were gay or like some other form of cheating, like they were getting women together. But I mean, you know, I mean, I told you before, the consensus about Phil is that he just was not a guy who strayed.
Yeah.
Brynn's just jelly belly. So anyways, on May 27th, 1998, Phil and Britt headed down to Newport Beach, my hood, and ate at the Cannery restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Before they headed back to L.A. around 4:30, they stopped at West Marine and made plans to meet up the next day at Phil's summer rental house in Malibu to surf and play tennis.
Sounds like a dreamy, warm day, right?
Okay. Phil arrived home and Brynn and the nanny were there. He asked Brynn if they were going for a date night, and she told him, no, we're doing that tomorrow. And he said, do you mind if I swing by my airplane hangar in Van Nuys, and I'll only be gone about an hour? And Brynn agreed. And after he left, she made like a snide comment to the nanny, like, he's never gone for just an hour.
Okay.
That's probably true, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so,
well, he's going from Malibu to Van Nuys and back?
No, he was at his house in Encino and he was going to Van Nuys and back.
All right,
so that's close.
Yeah.
Okay. So Brynn left the kids with the nanny while she ran some errands. When she got home, she asked the nanny if she could stay a little later that night so she could grab drinks with a girlfriend of hers at Buca de Pepo, and that Phil would take over watching the kids whenever he got home.
Okay.
The nanny agreed. Brynn left around 7:30 in her forest green Jeep Cherokee. I just thought that was worth mentioning because that was such a cool car at the time. You never see forest green cars anymore, right?
No, you don't. Actually.
And Jeep Cherokees really had a moment then.
They for sure did. I haven't seen a Jeep Cherokee in a long time, actually.
In a while. Yeah. Okay. So she drove, which Buca de Pepo is only 1,000 feet from their house, but whatever.
And did she go there? She actually went there.
She actually went there, hung out at the bar. Yeah. Phil came home around 8. So
his hour was a little longer than an hour.
It was a little longer. Yeah. The nanny said when she left, Phil was in the pool with the kids and they were all laughing.
Okay.
Okay. Meanwhile, at the bar, Brynn had 2 Cosmopolitans and her friend had 2 glasses of wine. Again, we used to drink Cosmos.
I know. I was just singing. I was like, isn't that a lot of sugar?
Yeah. No more, right? No. I think we thought those were like our skinny margaritas.
I know. Oh, my God. I had the best skinny margarita the other day. Oh, my God. It was so good.
Ugh.
Anyways, super frozen. You know, like the best frozen consistency of ice mixed with the margarita was so good. God.
Hello, listeners. Today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers online therapy, which is something I have personally benefited from and believe in. We all have life stresses that can be overwhelming. For me, it has been a game changer to have an online therapist who helps me navigate and reflect on life. I have had to work on setting healthy boundaries and my tendency to internalize, well, everything. It is heavy business, but I can't tell you enough how freeing it is to work through it. And personally, I find it easier to be open while talking things through from the comfort of my couch. it's so convenient. Online therapy for me has really meant becoming a better version of myself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/clink today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/clink.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Well, let me tell you, MyLifeInABook.com is a very unique service. I did it for my mom and my grandmother, and it has been amazing. It basically turns your mom's life stories or your grandmother's or anybody that you think is special in your life into a book. So here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send a question via email to the special person, whoever you choose. You can ask custom questions too, but I just kind of let My Life in a Book choose what questions to ask. And then your special person, like your mom, can type their response or they can record their voice. And My Life in a Book compiles it all in a beautiful keepsake for you. And guess what? They can even create audiobooks. I mean, this is such a unique gift that will last a lifetime for you, your mom, your children, your children's children. It is the best gift you can give. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use our code CLINK at checkout for 10% off. This is an unforgettable gift for you and your mom. Get it today. Use our code CLINK, MyLifeInABook.com.
Listen, I actually went out to lunch this weekend with my husband. You guys,
holy
I got
shit.
A babysitter.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know this. You didn't even tell me this.
You've been in Scottsdale.
Okay.
And we ate at the Wind and Sea, which I hadn't eaten at, in the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I drank cocktails, and they have the good crushed ice.
Oh, yes. I love it.
Oh, my God. I could have just sat there all day. I would have been so happy never leaving, but
then you had to.
Yeah. And my first cocktail did not come with the crushed ice. And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, I got to get that ice.
Yeah.
Got to get it. Yeah.
If you lived in Texas, you could just drive to Sonic and get a cup of ice.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anywho. Okay.
When you visit.
When I visit. Okay. So the ladies did not eat. So yeah, it's probably buzz, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So her friend says the conversation wasn't real unusual, but Bryn did say that despite her shitty sex life with Phil, they were getting along better these days. And she did lament a little about being 40 and her career not going anywhere. So, I mean, it sounds like Bryn kind of has a pattern, right?
Yeah.
The friend used the bathroom a couple times and said that while she did, Bryn used the payphone. But she didn't know who Bryn was talking to. And Bryn wanted to keep the party going that night, and the friend was over it, so she left, and Bryn left too, telling the bartender, I'll be back, and next time I'll bring Phil.
Okay.
Okay. So Bryn went to her friend Ron Douglas's house. They had dated 15 years ago, but Phil did not mind that they periodically hung out still. Ron says that when Bryn showed up, she was in an agitated mood. He describes her as being just starved for attention, and she just kind of wanted to bitch about how Phil was always with his friend Britt and how nothing was going on with her screenplay script. Okay, so this was something that Britt had written, which is really bizarre. It was about like some drug dealer murder.
Okay.
Okay. And people say that Phil kind of like begrudgingly gave it to people to read, but insinuated like, hey, I told my
you don't
wife
have to
I'd
do anything.
To you.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything.
She has like zero talent. Okay. It does sound like Brynn was kind of delusional, but at the same time, I do kind of feel sorry for her that it's pretty clear Phil did not believe in her at all.
Yeah. Which is kind of sad, right?
It's kind of sad, right? Okay. Anyways, she had a couple beers at Ron's and he told her, it's late, you should head home. According to him, she didn't seem too drunk to drive. Thank God. I mean, she's too drunk to drive after two Cosmos. I mean, thank God we have Uber now, right?
I know.
12:36, she called a friend that she sometimes called when she wanted to use, but the friend didn't answer. She also called her house and Phil did not answer. She then called 411. We don't know why. Ron waited up for her to call because she had said that she would call when she got home safely, but she never did. He figured she did, and he didn't want to, you know, wake up everyone in the house, so he never called. He just went to bed.
Okay.
Okay. She did make it home. It's possible that her and Phil argued, but we don't know. The son, Sean, recalls hearing a door slam and someone yell, sorry, sorry, sorry. Police think Phil was most likely asleep the whole time because of the way he was found, which was in bed, shot three times, wearing a purple shirt and red and white boxers. He was shot from no more than 18 inches away. He was shot with the pistol that the couple kept in a lockbox next to their bed. I mean, the thing of it is that I hope that he was asleep, but we just, you know, we'll never know. He was shot in the head and the chest, and we don't know which shot went first.
We don't know.
No, we don't know. Okay, so at 3:25 a.m., Brynn calls Ron up and tells him Phil is not home and she doesn't want to be alone. And he tells her, drink some milk and go to sleep. Well, 20 minutes later, he says she was banging on his door.
She leaves after killing.
She shoots Phil and then she tries to tell her friend, Phil's not home. And then she shows up at his house.
But what is she trying to get him to come over there? What was she going to do with that?
Yeah, I'll get to it. So he said when she came over this time, she reeked of alcohol. It was clear she had been drinking heavily since she left.
Ah, okay.
And he was like, I mean, come on, what are you doing? And she just said, just don't yell at me like Phil does. And she was crying and hysterical, and she blurted out that she killed Phil. But he didn't believe her. She started vomiting and then passing out until she would vomit again. So Ron is now, he's like exhausted. It's 3:30 in the morning and he's just watching her so she doesn't like choke on her own vomit.
Yeah.
You know? And then at one point, Brynn starts rooting through her purse and the gun fell out. And then he was like, whoa, like, I hope there was nothing to what you were saying earlier. You know?
Yeah.
He demands that she gives it to him. He takes the gun and he takes it and he says that he thinks that he can tell that all the bullets were still in the chamber. And so he was momentarily relieved. Before 6 a.m., it hit Brynn that her kids were going to wake up soon. And so she convinced Ron to follow her home, which he agreed to. She tells him, bring the gun. So he gets the gun and realizes this time that the gun has actually been fired. He put it in a grocery bag and then in the trunk of his car. He follows Brynn to the house. He said she ran two red lights on the way there. And she had a car phone. She called her friend Judy from the car. She tells her she killed Phil. And so she headed over to the house. When Brynn and Ron got to the house, Ron took the gun out of the trunk and followed Brynn into the bedroom where Phil was. And Brynn started screaming, oh my God, I don't know why I did it.
Oh my God.
I'm like, why did you bring the gun with you back inside the house?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, okay, so Brynn also called a friend, Steve, who was just three blocks away, and so he headed over to the house too. Ron, after seeing Phil, called 911 from the house and told them there's been a shooting. The dispatcher is trying to figure out, like, if it was an accident or what, and he just says, I don't know why the wife did it. She's drunk. So while he's on the phone, Bryn barricades herself in the bedroom with Phil's body, and she's got the gun.
How did she get the gun?
He brought it with him
into the
bedroom.
And then set it down?
And then set it down and then went to the other room to call 911.
Oh, my God.
I know. Okay. So at 6:21 a.m., Bryn calls her sister and tells her, tell my kids how much I love them. Okay, Bryn's friends that she had called arrive at the house, but they can't get into the gate. And Ron doesn't know how to open it either.
Okay. You push nine.
The little boy, Sean, wakes up and Ron asks him if he knows how to open the gate. And he did.
Okay.
So Ron opens the gate and he leaves and takes Sean with him. And by this time, the police had arrived. And so he let them in, telling them there's still a little girl in her bedroom. Officers enter the house and can hear Bryn on the phone with her sister crying. And so they announce their presence. She ended up shooting herself at 6:38 a.m. while they were still getting Bergen, the little girl, out of the house. The media got a hold of the story and they were camped out in front of the house by 9 a.m. when police gave a statement that, you know, both of the Hartmans were shot.
Oh, my God.
So awful.
That is so sad.
Yeah. They didn't remove their bodies from the home until like 2 p.m. that day.
Yeah, because it's a crime scene.
Yeah, I remember, like I'm sure many of us do, that footage in front of their house of them getting loaded up and being so shook by the devastating news. I mean, it's just awful. So the kids were told by their uncle that mommy and daddy were dead and they were
my God.
Sent to Bryn's sister's house in the Midwest to live.
No way. Mm-hmm. That's like a total shock for the kids, you know?
A total shock. Yeah. Both Bryn and Phil's families went into seclusion after the shooting, just issuing a single statement that said, this just hurts too much to say anything. I read that there was some fighting among the family regarding money. Specifically, Phil didn't leave any money to his mother. Mm-hmm. And he had been supporting her.
But he probably didn't because he thought that she would go before him.
100%. Right? So, like, you can't cut her off. Like,
right.
You know, right? Yeah. Okay. So pretty much everything else was left to his kids in a trust that they were to receive when they were 25 if they earned bachelor's degrees.
Okay.
He's so responsible.
That is responsible. So right? Did they? Are they 25? Is that, how old are they?
Yeah, I think they're both 25 now. Yeah, they are over 25. Yeah, I think they've both fulfilled. I'll tell you, they're doing great,
okay.
But I'll tell you about it. There was a service held for Phil at the Groundlings Theater, as well as a service at, you know, like the Hollywood Forever, Forest Lawn thing. Bryn and Phil were cremated, and some of their ashes were buried in Minnesota, where they have a plot together, which is kind of weird, right?
Like they bought it before?
I don't know
the family
how the
bought it.
Okay, so some of their ashes are buried together in this plot, and some of their ashes were spread together off of Catalina. If my husband kills me, I no longer want our ashes to be together. I don't want to be in the same cemetery. That's it.
Right.
I mean, it's till death do us part. You're dead. Let's part. Like, you killed me.
Especially if you...
I think that's, like, such bullshit. Like, for, you know, on for eternity. No, fuck that.
Well, not if somebody kills somebody else, like...
Yeah.
No.
I thought it was weird. Okay, so some of his ashes were spread off Catalina and on the boat, which was mostly Phil's friends. There was some grumbles from people who were like me. Like, why are their ashes still together? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the thing about that boat trip was that there was a specific spot on Catalina where Phil had told his BFF, that guy Britt, that he wanted his ashes put if he ever died. It was Indian Rock. And to get close to Indian Rock, you need to be like on a inflatable boat or a kayak. So they just spread his ashes like out there, but not right at the spot. So apparently Phil's friend held on to just some of his ashes. And it took him 20 years, but he did make it back to Phil's favorite spot and kayak over to Indian Rock, where he let, you know, Phil go.
Yeah.
Away from Bryn to rest, you know, with the fishes. Okay. At least there's that. When the autopsy was released, they found Zoloft, coke, and alcohol in Bryn's system. Bryn had been struggling with getting the correct dosage of Zoloft right to help with her anxiety for a while. Her doctor had told her to reduce the dosage, and it's not clear if she had followed his directions. One of the side effects of Zoloft is violent and or suicidal thoughts. Even though I'm pretty sure that they don't recommend mixing Zoloft with coke and alcohol, the Hartman estate sued Pfizer and settled.
Wow, for wrongful death.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they got a lot of money too.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of high profile. Pfizer probably just wanted it to go away. But it's like, can you really sue? Here's the thing about that. First of all, I'm sure that you're not supposed to mix coke and alcohol
with Zoloft.
Yeah. So I don't understand how Pfizer can be.
Drug.
Yeah. I'm sure I don't see how Pfizer could be responsible for that. Also, Bryn had a long history of going Looney Tunes. You know, like, it wasn't the Zoloft that, like, set her off. It was the years of emotional alienation and
turmoil, all that.
And stability.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Zoloft might have put her over the edge. I don't know. Nobody can ever know, right? Who knows?
I don't know.
But yeah, for sure. They just wanted to get it over with. And Pfizer has a lot of money. Even more now that they're making a fucking vaccine that everybody has to get.
That's true. Okay. So the Hartman children are all grown up now and both are successful and seemingly well-adjusted. I mean, it was probably good that they went to the Midwest to grow up. Kind of away where people didn't even know who they were.
100%.
You know?
Right? I mean, for sure.
Bergen posted a sweet photo of Phil on Father's Day in 2016. I went on her Instagram and it says, "As another Father's Day comes to an end, I am lucky enough to have had a number of father figures in my life, but this dapper dude will always have my heart."
Oh, that's sweet. Has she ever posted anything about Mother's Day?
Nothing about Mother's Day, and the son doesn't post anything about either one of his parents. And that's her only post.
Wow.
About him. So,
well, she was six when it happened.
Yeah, they did a thing 20 years later where Bryn's brother did an interview on the 20-year anniversary of their death. So the family finally spoke up.
Mm-hmm.
And on that interview, he said that both of the kids were, you know, just doing really, really great. I mean, I would certainly hope so. They both had Bryn and Phil both had large families.
Yeah.
So I would hope they had a lot of people around them that loved them.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And now they have some money if they're 25 and graduated college.
This Bergen is beautiful.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, she had like two celebrity looking parents.
Well, it's not, yeah.
Hollywood type. You know, they have like, I'm telling you, every actor or actress that I've ever met has this look about them. And I've met a lot. It's just this like unique perfection. And I think this is what it is. I think to be on camera, you have to have symmetry, right?
Yeah.
So like one of your lips can't be drooping, one side of your lip can't be drooping, or one side of your nostril can't be like a little bit higher. Like everything is kind of symmetrical. Even if you're not the most beautiful, you have this symmetry that just kind of works for the camera.
Yeah, I would say that is true for everyone except for maybe Sylvester Stallone. I have seen him in person, and you know how he looks like so, like, whoa.
Yeah.
You look a little worse for wear.
Yeah.
In person, it's even gnarlier.
Well, they have good lighting.
I was like, whoa.
They do have good lighting. So even the people that look like they haven't aged in person, they do look like aged. But, you know,
side note,
saying,
he was the nicest guy in the world, and his wife is stunning.
By the way, I hear
super sweet.
I've heard multiple times that he is just such a nice guy.
So nice.
Who did I see? I forget. Oh, I think I did see him in Chicago. That's right. And I was passing and I was like, hey, how's it going? And he was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so that is the craziest case, man. It's like, you did a really good job on that one. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks.
That's a lot of research.
Yeah, it's hard because, well, first of all, I read this book about Phil. It's called, like, You Might Remember Me, Phil Hartman. And I watched a lot of interviews and stuff. It's just that they go into so much detail about Phil's career.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get it. He was real talented. He had a real good career, but I want to know about his marriage. So that took a little
digging,
piecing it all together.
You know, a lot of people recommend some crimes. And the problem is we don't have enough information on the people themselves, just the crime that lasted like, I don't know, 5 seconds. And so we don't have enough information to talk about because we could talk for like 5 minutes and tell you exactly what happened. But it's so there's this fine line of like too much, not too much, not enough.
Okay, well, listen. So I've been looking into crimes. And so for my next bonus crime next month, I'm already thinking ahead. I'm going to do all these prison guard crimes, because I found a couple, but there's just not enough there. But I'm telling you guys, they are so fascinating.
Okay.
I'll just give you a little taste. I found this female prison guard cut a hole in her uniform so she could, in her hoo-ha, so she could have sex with the dude.
No freaking way.
And she's locked up right now.
Oh my God.
So then I was like, there's a lot of them. I'm gonna run down a bunch.
Okay, that's fun.
Yeah, so that'll be fun next month.
Wow, she really needed to get some.
She did.
Okay, well, until next month for that one. This Monday, we're doing a love triangle. Again, you know, I love those. Love triangles.
Love, 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 love.
Anywho, everybody that's in Texas, I hope that you are staying warm. Do not turn on your car in your garage. That is not safe. People are doing that and they are not making it through. People are going into their cars to stay warm, which I do think is like an okay thing to do, but make sure the snow is not in your tailpipe.
Oh my God. Oh, this is so heavy.
I know, but I'm telling you, you got to like, the shit's getting real out here. My friends drove to Louisiana because that's the only place that they could find a hotel near here. And it was,
oh my God,
usually a 3-hour drive, took them 6 hours. They found a hotel. They have like 4 little kids and their house was in the 30s. I can't freaking live like that.
Yeah.
So she was like, this is like craziness, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, you could come here, but I don't know how long my power is going to be on for. And I have no water. So we're almost out of food. So like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I wish I could drone you some.
It's okay. I'm out of here in a hot minute. I'm going to fly my ass to LA for a minute.
Okay. Good, good, good.
We can maybe record this weekend.
Okay.
Anyways, clink, clink, everybody.
Clink, clink.